You're listening to Rambling Business, the only multimedia podcast with Rick and Brandon,
where we get into your business no matter where it is.
And today we'll be talking about doing it yourself and starting a small business legacy. We continue our Costa Mesa construction business series, and if you've been following us, Rick and Judy have been sharing the stories of all the small businesses who have worked on the house remodel down in Orange County.
Right. And a lot of people don't know where Orange County is. It's just south of Los Angeles and north of San Diego.
Everyone knows where Orange County is after that show, The OC.
Oh, I didn't watch it.
Yeah, it was...
I mean, I should. Maybe I'll learn my directions better. I'm still getting lost.
Don't think it'll help you with that. Today, we're going to talk about the unique story of the heating and air conditioning contractor Family Heating and Air and its founder who learned the trade after bombing Hitler during World War II. Talk about a turn in the last half of the sentence. Also, stay tuned for our tax tales and business takeaways coming up.
This story starts in the 1940s with John William Hopton II. Now, the guy I talked to was John Hopton IV. So it was his grandfather.
So let's see. That would be later.
You were told there was no math in this problem.
I know. I do that for my the rest of my work. Well, actually, a computer does the actual addition and subtraction.
So anyway, Hopton II, after fighting in the Royal Canadian Air Force as a navigator, he returned home to open up a restaurant. Now, what's so cool about this is that later on in his life, he talked about World War II. Mm-hmm. And he was a navigator as a flight, you know, Royal Canadian going over there and bombing. And his brother was killed, actually.
Oh, no.
And he tried to join the Air Force at 17. They wouldn't let him join because he wanted to go. He hated Hitler, mm-hmm. you know, because he killed his brother. And actually, I heard that there's a Hopton Island in Canada that was named after his brother.
Oh, wow.
So I don't know if he's some hero or something. So.
And he was Canadian, so he was too nice to lie about his age.
So, right. So he did join. And he became the navigator, and he bombed. And later on in life, as his grandson was telling me, is that he started telling these stories on how he was bombing. He actually killed Hitler.
Okay, that's...
But the point is that it was the detail was amazing. Mm-hmm. He's the navigator, all right? So he knows where everything is.
Well, technically, then he navigated to Hitler.
That's right.
Someone else pulled the trigger.
Well, no. What happened,
well, I think
in
Hitler
his story...
Pulled-
His story is that they bombed a dam that flooded the area where Hitler was and drowned the family. He said that's the real story.
Oh, okay.
Now, who knows? You know, I mean, you know, there's all this controversy about did he commit suicide and all these
that's
different
what
things.
I'm pretty sure is the
I don't know.
Accepted thing.
Maybe he tried to swim and drowned. That's a suicide.
I guess.
Yeah, I don't know.
Wasn't he in a bunker in Berlin? What dam?
No, it wasn't Berlin. No. It was actually you were there.
I wasn't alive back
then. You weren't
then.
No.
I'm not that old.
We took you there when you were six.
Oh, okay.
There actually is this huge forestry type park, and his bunker area was in that area that we visited. It was in the area, you know, in the forest, in the hills. I think. This is what I'm going back to 19. How old were you then?
They don't want to tell you exactly where it is.
1996. I don't know.
Because then people would be peeing on it.
Right. There it is. Or dropping a bomb in a dam to flood it again. But anyway, so that's a story he would tell. You know, and I love legacies and, you know, when people tell stories. You know, the stories just get better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my stories have gotten better since.
So. I resist that account. Seems they've gotten worse to me, but...
So anyway, he returned back to Canada after the war, and he opened up a restaurant business. And the restaurant business was, you know, a very successful restaurant business. And but like any other business, it would break down, you know, the refrigerators and things mm-hmm. like that.
Yeah, a lot of maintenance in restaurants.
Right, you know, and so he had to call this mechanic to fix his refrigerators who was 20 miles away. Now, this is in the 1940s, so it's not like you just get on a freeway and you're there in 20 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
You know, this guy's charging you for travel. He's charging you for, you know, you got to spend a night in the hotel, maybe.
Model T.
That's right. So you know, at one time he just went, you know, I'm calling this guy too many times. I got to learn to fix this thing myself, which I think is something a lot of people did in those days. And your great-grandfather did a lot of stuff like that.
Well, yeah, I think things were easier to fix back then, too. Uh-huh. Right? You could fix a VW bug. I mean, I shouldn't be bringing that up since this is an anti-Hitler show. They invented it then during the Nazis. But, yeah, you could fix that with just like a crescent wrench.
Right. I mean, it used to be that...
Things were built... In a sturdier, more simpler way, because people were expected to fix things themselves.
Exactly. I mean, the old saying was you could fix your car with a wrench, a screwdriver, and a pair of pliers. And mm-hmm. that's it.
Yeah.
You know, and this now I remember when I used to...
Now you need a computer.
Right. When I used to have the 66 Impala, you know, I used to change my own spark plugs, I used to change my own oil. You know, I didn't need...
And I don't even know what a spark plug is. Is that where if something's sparking, you plug it up with one of these spark plugs? Keep it from sparking?
Yeah, unless it's a damn wall that's breaking, that's not called a spark plug.
Yeah. That's a little Dutch boy. Puts his fingers in there.
That's right. Then he had a paintbrush in his other hand, right?
Yeah.
But, okay.
We're really losing track of what's going on.
So anyway, Mr. Hopkin, I keep saying Hopkin, Hopton, he said, I'm going to learn to fix this. So he starts to fix this thing, and he's actually pretty good at it. You know, because he's very good with his hands, and so he said, you know, I'm going to go and learn. So he goes and goes to trade schools and starts learning how to do this stuff, and then he decides to leave the restaurant business and go into heating. And refrigeration. You know, refrigeration is a big deal, you know, in restaurants.
Well, I think heating's a bigger deal in Canada.
Yeah, I guess it would be.
Refrigeration's a bigger deal down here.
Those Canadians, they stay so warm in the winter. I mean, I told you the stories about how I was skiing at 0 degrees and my hands and down mittens were frozen. Mm-hmm. And I gave them to a Canadian friends. We switched gloves. He had these little cheap-ass little Kmart gloves. Mm-hmm. And they were like somebody that held over a fire. He took them off his hands and put them on my hands. And my gloves, he warmed them up. He was like a fire to me. This is how different these guys are up there.
Well, yeah, your body adjusts.
Yeah, mine didn't. coming from the beach area to Calgary. So, you know how he got through this? He got through the education with the VA type benefits.
Oh yeah.
So the Royal Canadian Air Force helped pay for his new career.
Did I ever tell you I have a Canadian helmet from World War II?
No.
I used to go to parties in college, and then when I'd come home drunk, I would buy things off eBay from the turn of the century. Never anything expensive, but one of the things I got was a World War II Canadian helmet.
That's cool. You got to show it to me sometime.
Yeah, if I can find it.
Well, you know, I have actual Soviet pins that Uncle Freddie brought me back.
Oh, yeah.
Before the Soviet Union fell. Yeah. And so I got the hammer and sickle and stuff like that somewhere. So it would be an interesting combination to wear a uniform like that. You're Canadian and Soviet.
Huh? I don't think so.
Yeah.
I think they fight over some of those islands in between.
That's right. So he worked in Canada. And then in 1957, he came out to Fullerton, the area here in Southern California, mm-hmm. and worked for a company here doing heating and air conditioning kind of thing. And then in 1960, he decided to start his own business in his garage. Now, how many times have we heard that?
A lot, especially in California, where everyone has a garage.
Right, just because they don't put their cars in there.
Yeah, you don't hear a lot of people in New York starting businesses in their garage.
Right, that's the only place to stay warm, right? Yeah. I hear it. We put junk in our garage.
I was just saying because they're all in apartments.
Oh, you're right. They are in apartments. You're right. So anyway, John Hopton III, which is the fourth I was talking to, his father. Okay, mm-hmm. We got to get these numbers right.
Yep.
He actually got an electrical engineering degree, but he didn't go to be an engineer. He instead went into the family business. And I asked John, I said, well, did that help him? He said, oh, yeah. He said, because, you know, electrical engineering, you know everything and anything about electronics, and now you're working on stuff that are built with electronics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you know a lot. So he brought a lot to the table.
Everything started having microchips in it.
Right. And we always talk about, when we talk about kids joining the family business, what are you bringing to the table? And he obviously brought something new.
Yeah, new expertise.
Yeah, so, they were always entrepreneurial. John, who I was talking to, you know, he got into the business when he got his driver's license in 1980. They put him in a big truck, all right? Yeah, nice. You imagine.
first car.
Austin, or you, at 16 years old. Okay, here's a truck. You can drive. Now go make some deliveries and pickups.
Yeah.
Big equipment.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or HVAC units.
I guess they were better drivers in 1980s.
The only thing I carried was pizzas.
That's right. That's right. And if you fell, it just, you crash, it just kind of got.
And the
gooey.
Closest thing to HVAC was those little bags that kept them warm.
So anyway, he did a lot of different things. Jean that I was talking to, he did auto detail business. He painted curbs. I even asked him if he wanted to paint our curb. Oh, yeah. We were doing this interview. I said, you want to paint my curb?
Yeah.
Well, you're right. He said, give me a stencil and some spray paint. Yeah, I'll do it.
I'll do it right now.
And he did a bunch of other things. But, you know, he went back to the business, and he started, you know, getting into this business and bringing a lot of things to the business as far as dealing with people. Now, one of the things I found that was so interesting about this company is how ingenious they were. They really tried hard. Now, you lived in that house that we were remodeling.
Yes, yes, yes.
And you saw the kitchen. And at the beginning, everybody's saying, no, you can't get a vent in that kitchen. It's just, there's just not enough room in the attic. The attic is only 2 feet high. Do you ever look in the attic?
No.
It was 2 feet high.
I don't like looking in attics. I've seen too many horror films.
That's right. Clown Mask.
Yeah.
Jumanji.
Yeah, right? Jumanji. That's the one.
That's the one.
That's the one that really scared me.
And then your mom starts playing bongo drums. That's even worse.
No.
On our last song. But anyway, so this is only like 2 feet high. And they can't get a unit up there. So they put it in a closet.
That's like all my fears.
Right. Well, they have to run a vent in the living room. All right. But there was a little bit of room there. But gosh, there was almost no room to get into the kitchen. But this guy that worked for him, Dave, I don't know. This guy somehow shrunk.
Yeah.
Somehow he shrunk into like a gnome size.
They call him Dave the Snake.
That's right. He climbed up in this thing all the way. This is like 20 feet he would climb on his stomach with nothing, maybe only a couple inches between his top of his body and the bottom of his body and the ceiling and not trying to fall through.
Oh, gosh.
Okay. And he puts the vent in and he runs the ducking. This is nuts.
That's crazy.
I know. It's amazing. And so he'd be a great spelunker, doing those kind of things. So it was a great company.
Should I ask them if he did that? Do you want to go spelunking right now?
Well, I actually asked John then. John didn't know what spelunking was.
Okay.
And I explained to him my experience, and he said, I don't think I want to do that.
Yeah, it's because he's smart, swallowed by the earth and never found.
That's right.
Go through something called Godzilla's nostrils. Right? One of them was called something ridiculous like that.
Well, the one that was tough was called the toaster, because you had two pieces of granite and you were like a piece of toast.
Oh.
And you can only move your toes and your fingers
oh.
that were above your head, and you have to pull yourself out of it.
Might You're be going dead. I'd just die of fear.
I know, really. And what happens if they had it turned up to like a 6 and all of a sudden you get burnt?
Yeah. You know, I found out that's just how many minutes it's down there.
Really?
Yeah.
I never knew that.
Well, there's your... That's
a business tip.
That's been our appliance corner this week. If you want to find out more about them, you can find out at familyheatandair.com. You're listening to Rambling Business. We'd like to thank our sponsor, Rick E. Norris and Accountancy Corporation. If you'd like to get the full experience, check out our website for videos, music, pictures, takeaways, and travel tips. www.ramblingbusiness.com. Now it's time for our tax tales, where we tell you about strange and unusual taxes from the past and the present.
Tax tales.
Awoo.
And since we're talking about Canada, we're talking about the good parts of Canada.
Right, maybe, right, right.
Maybe
right.
Go a little farther back to the darker side of Canada.
Right.
Which was in 1885, Canada created the Chinese head tax, which taxed the entry of Chinese immigrants into Canada. And the tax lasted until 1923, when the law was passed that banned Chinese people from entering Canada altogether, with a few exceptions. We had the same sort of things in America. You know, there's always... There's a fresh wave of immigration, and then people get scared, and then they ban people. So it isn't just America. It happened in China, too, or Canada, too.
Yeah.
Well, China happened, too, because the whole Boxer Rebellion, remember?
Uh-huh.
They didn't allow English people in there?
Yeah. Did they charge a head tax?
No, that was an opium war, I believe is what happened. Now it's time for our travel tips, where we tell you what fun things you can do around the Costa Mesa area.
If you'd like to visit the outdoors near Costa Mesa, get an Orange County Park annual pass. Now, we didn't know about this. Your mom and I went hiking around Tobuco Canyon because we're, you know, we just moved to Orange County and we're looking for places to go and things to do. And I remember Tribuco Canyon from one of the times that your brother was playing water polo. He played somewhere around there, Santa Margarita High School or something. Mm-hmm. And so we tried to find the restaurant, and it actually was closed, but it didn't open yet. But we went hiking, and we went to a county park, and the guy says, oh, yeah, well, the two of you, because you're over 55, 59, no, actually 60, I think it is. You get...
you don't know how old you are?
I don't know how old I am, but I don't know how old I told him.
I'm going to find your driver's license.
He said that you can get a discount for a whole county pass, all the different parks.
Oh, great.
So this way you don't have to pay for parking anymore. And the best thing about it, he said, is that many of these parks are right next door to the state parks.
Yeah.
So those are more expensive.
There's that great state beach in between Newport and Laguna.
Mm-hmm.
There's a beautiful state
right,
beach
right,
down there.
Right, right, right. You know what? I haven't been there long. I've been there, but I haven't been there long enough to memorize the name of it yet.
Yeah.
But you go to the county park and you park there for free because now you have a pass and you just walk over to the state beach.
Yep.
So that's a travel tip for today, how you can save some money and see Orange County.
Yeah.
While you're doing it.
If you're over 60. Well, I'm sure you could get a normal pass
right.
that would be cheaper than the parking.
They just won't be as nice to you as they are to me because I'm an old guy.
A dotard. You're in your dotage.
Oh, no.
It's like what they used to say about duchesses.
Oh, okay.
When they just knitted full time. I don't know.
Oh.
Look it up. Now it's time for our takeaways, where we tell you what steps you can take to implement what we've been talking about on the podcast. The first thing to think about is, as a small business owner, you may be paying other people to do things you could do yourself. Mm-hmm. And if you can do it yourself, you may want to get some training to do it professionally.
Uh-huh.
Because
it might hurt.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, even if you can do it yourself, in some cases, you want to do it right so you don't burn down your small business.
Yeah. And number two, try to accomplish anything that you can imagine. Hard work and persistence can really make some great results. For example, you know, we just talked about, you know, the climbing through the attic with Dave.
Yeah.
You know, what he was able to do and something that other contractors said couldn't be done.
Mind over matter.
That's right.
The third thing to think about is, as a local business, you may want to join a local business network to build up your referrals. This can be helpful, whether it's like an established local mm-hmm. business network or making friends with other businesses, like somebody who does kitchen remodels and you do HVAC.
Yeah.
Having a relationship so they can refer you if someone needs that work done can also be helpful. Or just joining an actual business network, like a Chamber of Commerce.
And John said, because he's been in Orange County so long, he belongs to a business network and has lots and lots of people. He says, whatever you need, let me know.
I'll find it. And because they're recommending people who they trust,
mm-hmm.
you know, if you know you're getting a better recommendation because
yeah.
they're staking their own
right,
reputation
right,
on
right.
it. So they're not going to recommend someone who's bad. The next thing to think about is you should take advantage of any governmental program like VA benefits to learn a new trade or profession. There's a lot of help out there,
mm-hmm.
Especially for small businesses and job retraining.
Mm-hmm.
That can help you make your business better or move on to a new business.
And last, take advantage of entrepreneurial opportunities to establish your business. You know, that's one thing he was talking about. You know, he said that the one thing that kept this country going is capitalism. But I look at it as more entrepreneurial when we're talking about small business people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a big difference between IBM
yeah.
and Family Heat and Air.
There's a big difference between the Rockefellers owning a train network and
yeah.
and a whole thriving Main Street full of small businesses. Now it's time to answer a question from one of our listeners. Jackie asks, my workers' compensation insurance is going through the roof. What should I do? Should I go to a payroll company that gives me whole insurance and a payroll package, or should I piecemeal them out?
I guess if you choose a poor workers' comp, you would say, She chose poorly.
I suppose you could say that.
But workers' comp insurance companies are not all like, contrary to what so many people think. They say, oh, it's just the same rates. Well, it's not. There's lots of different things. There's like the cost is modified by an experience, your past experience of how many injuries you've had.
Uh-huh.
And they do different computations like that. Sometimes one company will classify people differently than others.
And sometimes companies will be a little slower paying out. We've all heard that, especially for car insurance. There's certain companies that people know that take forever to pay you.
Yeah.
So definitely that's something to think about.
Yeah, and the last thing is that some people go the ways of like a combined payroll, workers' comp, insurance company, like ADP or paychecks, something like that. I never recommend those because they don't seem to work as hard for you on trying to get you the better rates. A broker is much better if somebody has connections or some sort of methodology of getting competitive rates. So in looking at workers' comp, try to find a broker or somebody that specializes in it and have them go to work for you and try to get you the best rates.
And then one last thing to think about is spending a little money on a safety training course could save you a lot of money in workers' comp later.
You had that one of the employers you worked at.
Oh, most definitely. I've worked at a lot of places where we had to have safety things, both restaurants and construction and things like that. I mean, what is it? An ounce of prevention is worth a gallon or quart or whatever.
Liter.
I don't know. Hogshead of... insurance? I don't remember. It's an old...
Sarsaparilla. It's... Hogshead of sarsaparilla. That's what it is.
I could go for some sarsaparilla right now. That's all we have for today's show. Tune in next week when we are going to stick around in Costa Mesa and talk about other construction businesses. But until then, I'm Brandon.
And this is Rick, and thank you for letting us get into your business no matter where it is. Our music and podcast was produced by my son, Devin S. Norris. For all your music, composition, and podcast needs, check out devinsnorris.com.